Okay. So now we're all here. There is no other session. Just briefly summarizing what we've been doing. We've been talking very specifically about how to build QCA models. And we've ended with some group work where two different groups thought about a case that they were familiar with and selected an outcome. And then some possible explanatory factors to analyze in connection with these outcomes. And this is the two cases that emerged. In the first case, some factors explaining whether women start successful businesses in rural Afghanistan as a means of economic empowerment. And in the other cases, factors explaining whether national statistical offices produce statistical information according to Eurostat standards or not. And then there was a discussion around, is this about understanding the role of the intervention or about understanding the role of other factors? And it's actually both. And these two are very much connected. So I think now we've discussed the selection of causal factors. We've introduced this example from Test in the Waters, which is in the book. And after this, the first two steps, which can be called model specification, the third step is data collection. So what is interesting to note about data collection? So first of all, QCA is neutral in terms of data collection techniques. Should be obvious at this point, but you know, maybe we should restate that QCA is a method. Sometimes it's called an approach, but it's definitely not a data collection technique. It's a data analysis tool. So you are free to use whatever tool or whatever technique to collect the data and obtain information on the conditions across the cases. You can use surveys, documentations, all sorts of interviews. Obviously, the idea is that you need comparable data, as we've been discussing, across all conditions and across all cases. So in other words, the matrix needs to be complete. There cannot be missing data. If you have missing data, you have a problem. So there are ways to fill in the gaps, but it's not as easy to fill in the gaps in a QCA dataset. It's not as easy as it is with statistical methods, where you have, like, I think it's called imputation methods. So it's like method was where you estimate the value of missing data. In QCA, there is no automatic way to estimate value. So what you do when you have missing data gaps, usually you do primary data collections, you do additional interviews, or you resort to experts. You draw on experts to tell you, to estimate the value. Obviously, this has kind of internal validity problems, because if you called a different expert, maybe they would have given you a different value. So it's a bit tricky. But so the general message is that missing data is costly. So if you have a lot of gaps in your data set, it might mean that you just simply have to remove conditions from your analysis or remove cases from your analysis. And again, this can come at a cost, because if you remove, you know, one case, then you lose all the information across all the conditions for that case. And if you remove the condition, you lose all the information about all the cases for that condition. So it's not a comfortable situation to be in. This is what a data set looks like. And it's the data set for the example, the repairs example that we have introduced earlier. So this is how it's organized. In the rows, you have different cases, like in other data sets, I guess. In the columns, you have the different conditions that you analyze in the model. And usually the last column is the outcome. So you see outcome 3, repair. And it can be, one means that in this specific case, which is called Smart Hand Pumps Kenya, repairs were made. In M4W Uganda, repairs were not made. The same for HSW Zanzibar. So you can see the values of the outcome. One means presence of the condition, zero means absence. So a mechanic is available to carry out the repairs. Yes, in first case. Yes, in the last three cases. Not, no, in the second and third case, and so on. Is it clear what the data set means? Okay, that's very important because it's a very sort of the basic unit of analysis, QCA. So it's important to understand well what it means. Exactly. Not really. I mean, well, you can use initially, you can use 1, 2, 3, and 4, but in the end, you have to convert this to a scale where the lowest is 0 and the highest is 1. So you would have 0, 2, 0, 4, 0, 67, and so on. Okay, so we've started to discuss this, and we all kind of realize that it's a tricky thing. Calibration is this process of assigning numerical values to empirical manifestations of conditions in specific cases. And in the guide, I suggest two strategies to do it, which both have pros and cons. So it's difficult to choose, and you know, the best way is to use a mix of these two if it's possible. But conceptually they're different. So one way is, you can call it deductive or top down, is to start from theory and to define presence and absence and intermediate degrees of a construct according to the way it's defined in a theory. So if you have a solid body of literature around a phenomenon that you're trying to test, you just use that definition, which is well known in literature. And this is interesting because it makes your study comparable to other studies that are out there. But the problem with this strategy is that it might not produce diversity. So, for example, it might be that your data set is all ones or all zeros, which doesn't make it very interesting to analyze with QCA. I think we'll see more of this later. And then the other strategy is, you can call it inductive or bottom-up, is to define presence and absence according to the empirical extremes that you have in the data set. So sort of go through, compare all your cases and see what's the worst case for the outcome, the best case, and the same for the other conditions, and define the worst case as a 0 and the best case as a 1, and then sort of score the other cases accordingly. This is nice because it kind of guarantees diversity, so you know that you're going to have some ones and some zeros in the data set, but the downside is that your findings might not be comparable with findings from other studies that have used different definitions. So that's, it's theoretical. Theoretically, it might not be ideal, and also you might have problems interpreting the findings. I think I will skip this. This is, we've already seen, these are some tables that we've already seen before in terms of how the outcomes are defined. We don't have time to sort of go through these definitions in detail, but one thing that this should give you an idea of is that this is what the rubrics look like. So you have a column for presence, and you define presence. You have a column for absence. You define absence. And then you ensure that if there are different researchers involved in this, for example, very large data sets, and you have to code high number of cases, then they all have the same understanding of these rubrics, so that they would all code a case as a 1 and or a 0, and there are no inconsistencies, like no internal inconsistency, which would lead to internal validity problems. So this is kind of a crucial moment in this sense. In the something I can say about this specific case, when the conditions were calibrated, is that initially outcome 3 was defined as in a way that was a bit more complex than the final way that it ended up being defined. It was like water plants are repaired or targeted planning takes place based on ICT reports and processing. And this definition was initially chosen because there was one case where the water points were not repaired, but some targeted planning was taking place, so there was a discussion, but is this a success? You know, we can't consider this a failure because they haven't done it yet, but, you know, they will do it soon. So there was this kind of discussion. But then the situation was complicated because in another case, which initially the researchers thought was similar to this one, to this case where targeted planning was taking place, but then the data was not clear, so they couldn't understand exactly what kind of planning was taking place. So in the end, the final decision was made in order to avoid like inconsistency, in order to avoid that the same number meant different things and covered different things that you wouldn't really want the same number to cover. So in order to avoid that, you know, success meant something that didn't really sound successful or didn't really look successful, they just said, okay, we're going to consider 1 as water points are repaired, and that's it. And this led to removal of those two strange cases from the analysis. So for the other outcomes, we had 8 cases. And for this outcome, we were able to only analyze 6. So because of the way that the outcome was defined, and these two cases had to be removed because I forgot what I was trying to say. No, oh, okay, I was looking for the matrix. Yes, okay. You can see that you have only 6 cases here. And repair means repairs. It's not mean repairs or targeted planning. Okay, so this was just to give you an example of like how careful you need to be when calibrating conditions so that you avoid this danger, which is comparing apples and oranges. And this is an example of what a fuzzy set looks like. Sorry if the defining cells are much larger than the number cells, like the table that you don't like in the report. But again, just to give you an idea of how it can look differently, I think this was about... Oh no, this was not about political pluralism, which is something some of you raised. It's about... No, there's no political pluralism. It's about other conditions in the analysis, so... existence of space for dialogue between state and civil society, capacity of a civil society actors to engage, and the horizontal coordination between civil society and actors. So essentially, these rubrics were scored in a similar way. Maybe I shouldn't be presenting this because I don't think this is a good example of how to calibrate fuzzy sets. And in the guide, I go at great lengths in explaining why I don't think using fuzzy sets is a good idea, because every value should be defined, should be qualitatively different, and it shouldn't be just, you know, the second. This looks a bit like you know, the second point in the scale, the third point in the scale, because it's kind of the same for all the conditions. I don't think this is how it should be. But, you know, if you change these definitions, then this is what the matrix looks like. And you have 0, 0, 66, 0, 63, and 0, 33, and so on. But it's interesting to see, like, what you come up with when you try to calibrate your conditions in the exercise. So if it's easy to choose the Boolean, like the dichotomous way, or you prefer going the fuzzy set way. Yes. Yes, you can, but I mean, I would expect, let's say, if you are using fuzzy sets and you were able to define in this kind of fine-grained way most of the conditions, then the conditions that you choose to define sort of as 0 and 1, for which you don't have this middle scale, I would expect them to be very different. Yeah, just because it's like I've considered the possibility of using middle values, but I'm not using them because I just don't need to use them. And these are really two extremes. So there is nothing in between. So it's not very, in practice, in the applications that I've seen, I haven't seen this very often. So they either use fuzzy sets and all the conditions are fuzzy, or they use crisp set. Crisp sets means like dichotomous, and all the conditions are crisp. But in theory, it's possible. Like, it's technically possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yes, and we mentioned this during the introductory presentations. But yeah, that's a good point. I think this is something that I cover in this slide. I'm covering in this slide. So before we actually try to do this ourselves in their cases, what are the common challenges to calibrations? So the first one, it's simple, but it's not as easy to do as it sounds. It's providing qualitative descriptors of all values. So it's not just, you shouldn't do it the way that, you know, the people did it in the other example. It shouldn't be the second point, the third point, the fourth point. It should have a meaning. Like, how do you define partial degrees of membership? Technically, these are called membership scores, and they also have strange qualitative names. So, for example, because the idea is that one means full membership to the set. So think of this in terms of set theory. Not sure I have a visual representation of this. Probably no, I don't. Well, this is for something else. But try to think of sets as kind of circles, and circles that can be included in other circles, or can be completely separated from other circles. they can be partially overlap. Try to think of fuzzy sets like this. I have this drawing in another presentation from 2 years ago. I could, anyway, I can find it if you want, but it would take me some time. But so the idea of full membership is that the empirical case is fully included in the ideal set, in the ideal case. And then the zero means fully out. So it's the empirical case is completely outside the ideal set. And then there are this kind of intermediate overlap. So it's like 0.6 means that it's more out than in. Sorry, it's more in than out. So you would something that is kind of overlaps. It doesn't takes a little bit more than half. Let's say that the overlap area is a little bit more than half of the total area. 0.4, it's a bit more out than in. And then 0.9 is like almost fully in. 0.1 is like just tiny overlaps, like almost fully out. So there are this kind of qualitative strange way of saying fully in, almost fully in, more in than out, almost fully out. And so this is the way that they describe kind of fuzzy sets membership. But that's the thing. That's my problem with fuzzy sets. Like I cannot think of a clear case. I mean, there are examples in the QCA textbooks. Like, you know, if you read the textbooks, there are examples from political science, and you know, there are that makes sense. But in evaluation, like especially in development evaluation, I haven't so far. Like in the cases that I've worked on, I've never. And that I've also quality assured, because I did some quality assurance as well. I've never found a case where I said, oh, they used fuzzy sets really well and they defined it exactly as they're supposed to be defined. No, I just...
I think you're on the right track. I think fuzzy set is one complication too far.
Yeah, I don't... Thanks. I didn't know you agreed, but it's nice to know that you agree. Okay, so one additional problem with fuzzy sets is that not only you have to define these intermediate states, but these intermediate states need to be ordered. So it's like what you define as 0.2. It needs to be worse than 0.4, which in turn needs to be worse than 0.6, and then 0.2 needs to be a lot worse than 0.6. So it's hard to think of qualitative constructs that can be sort of ordered in this way and articulated in this way. So for example, if you say people, cost, no, let's say cost is not an issue. So is it, can you compare this to, for example, having information about how to report, or like people who want to report the problem have sufficient information and knowledge to access the number? And then you compare this to people who want to report the problem, encounter problems in using the reporting mechanisms. Like, is this part of the same thing, or is it like two different states? I mean, I don't know. I find it really, for me, it's a bit puzzling. I don't have an example of a construct that is used in this field that works well with fuzzy sets so far. If I find one, I will let you know. And obviously, if you can think of one, you're welcome to tell me.
I mean, there are many examples that you can use of certain fuzzy sets. using graded markers. But the, I guess the issue is more making sure that with every grade you have the same marginal difference. So you have the same quantifiable difference between any two grades. So when you go, so that you, when the thing that you grade 0.4 is double as good or twice as good as what you rate 0.2. So I guess that's probably
yeah.
the problem when you want then to make calculations based on this. I mean, it's not the grading or the qualitative difference in itself, it's the quantitative difference between any two steps.
Yes.
Because, I mean, graded markers have been used and are used, I mean, anywhere, anytime. It's just what you want. I mean, how much calculation,
yeah.
what type of calculation.
And it's not so much, I would say that, like, internally, the essential thing is that they are ordered. So it's not so much the distance between them, but like the fact, you know, the ranking, like what comes first and what comes last and what comes third or second. But then it's actually even more complicated because the we will see this when we see the truth table and the Boolean minimization. So when you use fuzzy sets, you are comparing the scores between conditions. So it's like you have... Okay, let's go back to this matrix. So you're comparing this 66 here with this 66 here.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And with this zero here. So it's like these scales need to be comparable across conditions. And this is very important, it's crucial, because the way that you build a truth table within fuzzy sets is like you compare scores in the conditions with scores in the outcome. And if it's lower, then you take it as evidence of a sufficiency statement. If it's higher, it's a necessity statement, and then you cannot include that in a truth table. So essentially, it's crucial for inclusion in a truth table, but it's weak because most cases it's not based on like strong qualitative arguments. And then another thing is that you do all this work, and at the end, you still have the truth table because fuzzy sets, essentially, it's just a different way to build a truth table. So at the end, you always work with a truth table. It's just that in the case of fuzzy sets, it has a different meaning and it's built differently than in crisp sets. I mean, it has the same meaning technically, but it's built differently. So it represents data in a different way. But at the end, you still have the truth table. So I don't know. I find it... I definitely don't recommend it, but if it's not clear already.
Can you show what the truth table is?
Yes, yeah, so the truth table, I wanted to get there after you build some kind of data sets, because the sequence of steps is that now you have the model, and then you calibrate the conditions. So you define presence and absence, or intermediate steps. And then you're here, you imagine that you're collecting the data on these conditions, and you kind of build a fictitious data set with some cases and values and conditions and outcomes. And then you start synthesizing the data set. So the most of chapter 2 in the report, which describe these four different procedures to synthesize the data set, start there. Once you have built the data set. The truth table is a first way to synthesize the data set. So it's similar to the data set, but it's a bit different. It's simpler, but it's not completely different. So, you know, in theory, we should follow an order, and when we get there, we will see what this is. In practice, we have 1 hour and 40 minutes. So I suggest that we just get on with this and try to be quick. I mean, you don't need to do the evaluations now, it's just to sort of try to understand what challenges can emerge and relate this to your to cases that you're familiar with. Yeah, so I would suggest that you go back to your groups and just reflect on how to calibrate presence and absence for intermediate degrees for at least some of the conditions and the outcomes, and then try to build some fictitious data set we don't have a lot of time, so a simple one would be better.
Can you pick conditions?
So you want us to do 3 or 4 number of conditions?
Yeah, I think 3 or 4 would be ideal. And you don't have to, we don't have time to, go in detail about the calibration challenges of all the 4 conditions and the outcomes. So I would suggest just reflect on calibrating 1 or 2, like, for example, the outcome and 1 condition, or maybe 2 conditions, and then for the rest, just kind of invent numbers or try to think of what cases you can imagine, and then just try to build this data set. Do you think you can do this in 15 minutes? Yes. You mean the slide with the data set?
With our conditions, so that we
yes.
Because you wrote them down.
Was it this? Yes, this one. Yep. Okay. Okay, good. Yeah, and I mean, I don't know if that's because of how they did it, but in the Arab case, the findings were exactly the same. So it's like all this work and then I have the same findings? What? Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think it kind of, it's something that gives reassurance, because one of the biggest critiques to QCA is that, it just works with dichotomous conditions, it's unrealistic. And so it's kind of a way to tell people, no, you can, use degrees and